hi friends, it's great to be here and thanks Satish for the kind words at the start and Ashish for the great presentation some time back. What I'm going to speak about today is about Java trends. The attempt is I'm trying to gaze into the future and try to see what I've been doing over the past few days. I'm just trying to put up a few technologies, a few things that might change with Java over the next year or so, and let's see if we can have a closer look at these technologies, and this might help you over the next year or 2 years or so. All of these technologies are today in a very nascent stage, so nothing of what we see today might be relevant to you when you go to your office tomorrow morning. Unfortunately, it's Monday tomorrow, but I can't tell you. Monday views will be setting in already, I suppose, for most of you. But at least we will have good food later also, that should be compensated. This is mock up. So I'm going to look at these four things today. First step is Ajax. Some pronounce it as Ajax as well. I do not know what's the correct pronunciation, whatever suits you. So first is Ajax, second is SOA, third is EJB, 3, and fourth is scripting languages. Java is very good at acronyms. So first three are acronyms that will scare you to begin with. So I want you to be worried and so that you'll pay more attention to what I'm saying. Okay, let's begin with Ajax. How many of you have heard of what Ajax is? Very few. And how many of you think that you have used Ajax? Okay, I can bet that all of you have used Ajax. Because Ajax really, the concept has come in because of Google. Gmail and Google Maps is the best example of what the Ajax application is. This is a new way of developing a web application. We have all been developing web applications for many years now. But what Ajax has done is has revolutionized web applications to a certain extent. The way we develop web applications today might not be the way you develop applications, say, 1 year down the line. It's not ready for prime time today, but hopefully in another year or so, Ajax will be ready for applications that you would be developing in your day-to-day jobs. So I'm saying that Gmail and Google Maps is the best example of Ajax. So I'll look at an example and try to show you how Ajax is different from Gmail and Google's bits in. The Ajax concept really is the full form of Ajax. Okay, so asynchronous JavaScript and XML. Anyway, it doesn't help much, is it? Anyway, so what Ajax does is completely changes the way you develop web applications today. This slide that I've taken is from the original article written by a person called Jesse James Garrett. He really coined the term Ajax. Google Mail, Gmail was already there. But people did not call it Ajax, they just thought that Google has done something fancy and Gmail has the superior interface compared to any of the other services like Hotmail or Yahoo. I suppose all of you would have realized that the user interface for Gmail is far superior to what you have in Hotmail. In Hotmail, you click on inbox, you wait for 2 minutes and then you will get a fresh page and then you will see your mail or something like that. With Gmail, what happens is you click on inbox, the page never goes away. The key thing with Gmail, why people found it so user friendly, was the page never went away. You already had something on page, so the biggest hurdle in HTTP of a request response model, where essentially every time you send a request and you wait for 20 seconds for the response. If you are on a dial-up connection or VSL or VSL, you wait for 30 seconds for the response. I just keep moving it every 30. So what Ajax does is it tries to eliminate the wait time for the user internally. Essentially, you have to go to the server and you have to do processing on the server side and stuff. But how they change the web application is they try to eliminate this request response. That's why in the full form for the acronym, you have the synchronous. So what they're trying to do is break the basic thing in HTTP model, in the HTTP web application, where you send a request and you wait for a response. With Ajax, you send a request and you don't wait for a response. The application does not stall. The application stays live, it is working. So if you're using Gmail, you click on inbox, the application does not stall. Its query is there. Okay, so what's different? Why is it so different? What's different about this application? On the left, I have got the standard application that you've been developing for many years now, where you have a user interface. That is not clearly visible, but kind of it. Where you have a user interface, you send a HTTP request. This is the server side part. And I think I have a pointer here. I might as well use this. Oh. Okay, This is the server side part. This is what we are doing today. This is the client side, the user interface. There's nothing there really apart from normal HTML and JavaScript and everything you have on your server side. So what Ajax does is, they say that put something more on the client side. Right now the client side is remarkably down. There's nothing there. There's the basic HTML, JavaScript. You have all your functionality, all your stuff on the server side. So what Ajax tells you is, because more and more people are having broadband connections, they're saying that at the first load of the application, you can afford to take a little longer. How many of you realize that when Gmail, you log into Gmail for the first time, the first page loads up a lot slower than any of the other applications?
Yeah.
The reason for that is, Google does not just load the inbox on the first page, it loads the IX engine along with it. So what's happening there is, it's loading your basic stuff that is showing on the first page. But apart from that, it is loading the IX engine or Ajax engine that it is going to use throughout the time that you are using Gmail. So there's a big piece of it. It's getting further away from a page to being an application. Gmail is not really just a web page. It's more of an application that is loading when you log in. So with Ajax model, what they're saying is you have an Ajax engine running on the client side and not just sending basic dumb HTML or dumb JavaScript. So they say that create an Ajax engine with Google. What they have done is they have done it on their own, and it's not very easy. How many of you have worked on JavaScript, like in depth in JavaScript? How many of you like working with JavaScript? All of us hate JavaScript. It's remarkably tough to work with. Debugging problems is very difficult. So essentially, when you think of, okay, I have to put functionality, I have to put logic on the client side, it's going to be very difficult. Because you have to write a lot of
questions. Yeah. All this stuff we can do with Microsoft Active Control as well. Right. If I put an Active Control on the web page, right, it's going to be a thin client instead of a thin client. So how different it is from past this technology?
Yeah, but if you access Microsoft Outlook over the net, essentially that is what's happening. They are just loading ActiveX Control. But not many people are comfortable with loading Microsoft ActiveX Control. If it was that good and it was so widely adopted, everybody would have gone for that approach. But very few people are anyway comfortable using Microsoft technologies. And adding ActiveX is anyway, many browsers actually block ActiveX straight away. They won't let you run ActiveX Control just out of the box.
I have another option, Java Applet.
Java Applets also is a good option, but it doesn't work. Java began with Applets.
We can do the same thing with Java Applets. What's the difference? That's what I'm trying to get out of.
They are trying to get an application going with just the basic web functionality. Anything that a basic web browser can do today, Java, HTML and JavaScript, they are trying to get you a powerful web interface in just that. They are not telling you that install a Java virtual machine or install or
all that stuff is already being taken care of. They are using let's say Java class tag instead of applet tag.
Right.
JDK or JRE will be downloaded automatically from
the
Sun's website. You don't need to care about it.
Yeah, but
right?
These technologies have been around for 10 years,
right?
Nine.
So it's more robust.
Yeah, everything is right. Whatever thing, everything is correct. Everything is fancy can be done in applet, but it doesn't work. How many applets do you see on the net today? You'll have to go around searching the things and you will not see any.
How many apps
do you have? You have Gmail, you have Google Maps, and it's still a very nascent technology. You will see, that's why I'm saying it will happen in a year or so. So it's supposed to be, it's not, if it was already there, I wouldn't be speaking about it. So it's supposed to be a trend.
My perspective was how it differs from our traditional technologies, which has been supporting us a fat client. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. They're trying to do everything with just HTML and JavaScript. That's the basic thing.
Okay.
They're not going beyond what you will have in any web browser coding.
We can see Ajax is a JavaScript engine.
It's completely dependent on JavaScript. The Ajax engine that you run on the client, there's lots of JavaScript in it. So it's not a very simple thing. Okay. Conceptually, it might just seem like I just have one more element there, but actually it's quite difficult. Because writing this Ajax engine on the client, Google could do this because they might have 100 engineers on it. You cannot do this in a small company. So that's a hurdle that is there with Ajax, and it will change with time. Okay, so what I've done here is every time you hit the Ajax engine, the Ajax engine will talk to the server. When you click inbox in Gmail, your click is not directly hitting the server. Your click is just hitting the Ajax engine running on your machine itself. So every time you, it's not the traditional request response kind of thing. Then the Ajax engine will talk to the, will send HTTP request to the server and get the XML data in response. So that's the way it works internally. There's a new object that has come in JavaScript over the past few years. Or anything above IE 5.0, I think, has that object set. Firefox I think has it right from day one. It's called XML HTTP request. So that object in JavaScript is used to send these kinds of requests. So the, internally the AJAX engine is used XML HTTP request to send the request to the client, to send the request to the server and get a XML response in return. And another important element here is this request will not be synchronous. That's the key thing. It will send a request and forget about it. It's asynchronous. Normally when you send a request, you wait for the response. Whereas in this XML HTTP request that you send in AJAX, you don't wait for the response. You just send a request, you say that on callback, this is the function that you are supposed to call, and you forget about it. So that asynchronous also removes that delay that you get when you are working web applications, because it is asynchronous. So the application at the front end can continue, the application at the front end does not stall, but internally at the back end these things are happening. So when you see, when you click in Gmail, when you click inbox for a second time, if you want to check anything, if anything new has come in, you see that the page stays there, the other thing on the page keep working, but then they put a loading or something at the top, that something's happening at the back end, but your interface is not tampered with, or it's not any less functional than it was otherwise. So that's the way the architecture for AJAX changes. Any other doubts on this? Oh, you have it at the end. If you have any doubts in between, feel free to talk.
If I have disabled the JavaScript, then what?
Only the newer versions of Opera supporting Gmail. So that is the hurdle that is there, that is the drawback that is there. They say fine, we accept that drawback and still we want to go ahead. And still they feel that we have a powerful interface with Gmail that can match an Outlook Express or a Microsoft Outlook to a certain extent. And we are doing all of that in just a browser without any accuracy. So it's a drawback that is there. Anything else?
Actually, not any other way then. By using JavaScript, and if you disable them, any other facilities? Just only.
I don't know, if you disable JavaScript, if Gmail falls back to some standard Hotmail kind of mechanism, I haven't tried it. That could be something. If you find that the browser has disabled JavaScript, then you go back to your traditional request response kind of model that you have been using for so many years. So you can do something like that. Initially, you check if JavaScript is enabled, no, then take him somewhere else. If it is enabled, take him to this AX kind, AJAX kind of model. You can do something of that sort. Okay, so this, okay, this is, these are like plus and minus for AJAX today. There are of course browser issues, lots of browser issues, because anything below IE5, I'm not very sure of this IE5.0, but the older browsers do not support AJAX. You'll see that even if you try accessing Gmail on anything older than IE5, it does not work. It did not work with Opera until 6 months ago. So browser issues is a big thing, as it is always with JavaScript. Anybody who has worked with JavaScript would know that the pain in JavaScript really lies in the browser compatibility. Anything that works very well on IE6, you take it to Netscape or you take it to Firefox and it will keep it alive. Something strange will happen. So that's of course going to be there. So no issues, but that it's always good to state. Usability issues to a certain extent, because people are not as used to this kind of interface in the web model, but that I don't think is a big thing. Asynchronous again, because it works a little different than the standard model. So you have to develop an application in such a way that it is working asynchronously. We are so used to developing applications where you send a request, wait for a response, that this approach is a little different. Where you send a request and don't wait for a response. You just said that the callback is so-and-so, and you, whenever the response comes in, it will accept that callback. So that is a little different, that when you are developing applications, you have to be aware that you are not developing a synchronous application, but you are developing an asynchronous application. And last is of course JavaScript. JavaScript is a royal pain. It's very difficult. So the answer lies in the plus. AJAX plus. The first point is new frameworks, tools and standards. What's happening is, because JavaScript is such a tedious thing to work with, people don't want to do all this AJAX engine stuff on their own. So there are frameworks coming up. For example, there is a company called Backbase. There are the other company name I don't remember. There are frameworks coming up for AJAX. So they tell that you use our framework, so all this AJAX engine and stuff will do it. That will get loaded automatically when you use our framework for your application. you just have to use our framework and use whatever APIs or stuff we provide. So then you are free from all the JavaScripting. Your application stays just as complex as it might be today. You just have to use a few things that things that might. It's somewhat like struts has done to Java applications today. Everywhere struts has almost become a standard. Everybody just leverages the features of struts and tries to build over struts. Nobody cares what struts is doing. Similarly, they are saying that these frameworks will become so popular that, that many big companies are really vying for getting this Ajax framework, and the first one to get this Ajax framework will make a lot of money. That's for sure. That's what it seems from all the whatever you might read on the net. Anybody who has a good Ajax framework first out of the door will make a lot of money or might be acquired by IBM or Oracle or stuff. But currently there are no proper frameworks out there. Google did it everything on their own.
Actually, what is the support for using Ajax? Do we have the client side language available as
the
open source or something? Or it's just a standard, right?
It's just part of JavaScript. The XML HTTP request is part of JavaScript. Anything about IE5 or Firefox latest versions, it will work fine. You can write your Ajax client today itself.
Okay, so
but it's just difficult to write.
We have to still write the Ajax component ourselves as on today.
Yeah.
There is nothing available on open source or commercial.
Commercial, there are a couple of frameworks available, but yes, they are the market standard. So there's one company called Backbase that I can recall right now. This is based in Netherlands, I believe, which have a framework for Ajax.
So if I have to develop Ajax, it has to be at my architecture level, the way I utilize JavaScript for maybe caching purpose.
Right, and you need to write your own JavaScript today, or you can buy their framework. It's not, I don't know of any open source Ajax framework that is out as it. I suppose it will come in another year or so. But it's just a matter of time before we have this framework. So there are so many companies that are either involved in developing these things or are seriously considering it. For example, in the new JDeveloper version, we have an interview on the site that says that in the next JDeveloper, Ajax is like one of their top priorities. Developing an Ajax application right from within JDeveloper is one of the top priorities for Oracle today. Similarly, it's the same case for all the companies. And because Ajax is such a popular term today that if I'm running a site today, dictrends.com, if I put a title on my any of the articles saying Ajax, I'm sure that you get a certain amount of it. So it's just so popular today.
I feel is during past so many years of web application development, companies themselves has written that if you are writing a big application, company might itself has written for its own purpose
right.
Some JavaScript framework which performs all these issues, like the application which currently I am working on. It already has such kind of framework, so isn't there a standard which standardizes all such issues and which projects developer should follow? Something like a J2E standard. It's just a standard.
I don't think there is any standard outside. Okay.
So, who is the governing body for this?
I am not very sure of this.
It will go in future?
Either there might be proprietary framework that we come up to begin with, or Apache might step in and start developing its own open source Ajax framework, even that's likely. Okay. Proprietary frameworks already there are a few out there.
But once we are in proprietary area, we have to
I suppose someday it will come in the open source once it becomes so popular, or there might already be some open source project for Ajax. I am not very sure of if you check out, I suppose there would be somebody who has done something in open source as well. I do not remember the name right now. Okay, so also there are tools and standards. Currently there are no tools for you to develop Ajax applications, so you'll have to develop Ajax applications on your own. You'll have to write the code and do everything on your own. There's no tool support, but it should take about a year or so. The next version of JDeveloper, the next version of WSAD, I'm sure we'll have something in there for Ajax. Again, the next version of Java. Next version of Java, the Mustang release, whenever that will happen, maybe 1 year or 2 years down the line, they have Ajax support inbuilt. They have a new API, javaxnodescript.api, and there's a language called Rhino, which is JavaScript written entirely in Java. That again will be there in Java 6. So with Java 6, whenever Java 6 comes out, you don't even need a web browser for you to have an Ajax application. You could have a Java application which is sending your synchronous request at the backend. So then even the web browser will go out of the picture because Java itself is supported. So you create a Java application which internally is using a synchronous messaging, I will not call it messaging, but a synchronous request response kind of thing. So that is also one thing that is likely. Then there's this JSON, which is a data intelligence standard. That again is one that is emerging. where this is a standard that they have defined in which you are supposed to send data. So when I send a asynchronous request using the HTML HTTP request, what they say is you would get a response in JSON standard, which is defined like how the data should be sent. So some standards are emerging, but it's still very new. And as I said in the last point, it will go beyond browsers when Java 6 supports it, so any of the basic APIs supported. Because then you don't need a browser. Currently you need a browser to send a request, a synchronous request using XML HTTP request that is provided in JavaScript. Tomorrow when Java or .NET and all these stuff start supporting AJAX right from within the language, you can do that even from a standalone application that is not working in the browser. So that is going to happen. Just a matter of time, I think so. Next up, SOA. Anything for doubt with AJAX? Spent quite some time on it. Okay, SOA. How many of you have heard of SOA? Okay. SOA is Service Oriented Architecture. Again, this is a very popular keyword, and if you go to any conference today, we'll see Oracle guys, VA guys, everybody is talking SOA. We are developing this SOA, that is why. It's a very fancy and popular keyword today. But as such, the concept is fairly simple, where what they are saying is instead of developing an application as a big monolithic structure, you split up your application in terms of services. They say that if I have a functionality for credit card processing, I want to validate a credit card, then they say that instead of locking that code into something else that is there in your application, you write a separate service that will just do that. Nothing beyond credit card processing, nothing more, nothing less. So that will be an independent service that you will use anywhere you want in any other applications. So we have already been doing this to a certain extent in the application that we have been developing so far, where you try to create components that have reusable functionality. So as such, SOA is not very special. We have already been doing this to a certain extent. The special part really comes in because so far we went talking with web services. We created components. For example, you create a Java component that does credit card validation or something, and that same Java class is being used everywhere, or you create a component and you access with over RMI and stuff. But what's different now is web services is come to such a level where you can create services separated across locations anywhere on the planet, and you can access them using web services. So this is a very idealistic kind of thing where not many companies I think will end up adopting SOA, because how many of us are comfortable using,
performance
will be a big issue, and web services has been around for so many years, but still very few really use web services today. But the concept is such that you split up your application in terms of services and you use those services using web services. Okay, so it's a paradigm for building distributed applications. So they are just splitting your application in services. So this is happening because I was at the Oracle presentation at Open World, and they say that internally when Oracle is developing applications today, they are splitting the applications in services, and internally those applications are talking to each other as web services. So although you might be using Oracle application as a whole, application server, you might run Oracle application server as a whole. Internally, Oracle application server might be running based on 30, 40, 50 services, and those services are talking to each other as a web service. That's quite likely. So internally, many companies, especially product-based companies, are already adopting SOA to a certain extent. But service-based companies, I am not very sure how they can adopt it, because everything is so different from everything else that you're doing. That I do not know if adoption is that high. Okay, next up is a standard called Beeple that is emerged because of SOA. So now with SOA, they are saying split up your application in terms of services, split up in terms of location, everything is distributed, everything is all over the planet. So how do I manage all that stuff? Not visible. Okay. So what they are saying is this is another standard. This is again a standard. Beeple is a standard. It's called business process. Execution language. So what they are saying is, if you are seeing struts config, what does struts config.xml essentially do? You are just written down there how the flow of your application is going to be. You will say that these are my action classes, these are my forms, these are the parameters, or this is the input page and stuff. Similarly, they are trying to do something like that with web services and SOA. So Beeple is an XML language, XML based language. So end of it, Beeple is just an XML file in which you define that I am using 20 services. This service is coming from here, this is validating my credit card. This service is coming from somewhere else, this is doing some other functionality. And I put all of that together in a Beeple file, a normal XML file. Very similar to what you do in struts config, where you write XML file which has all the references to all the actions and other stuff that you're using. Similarly with Beeple, they are doing something like this. And then they create And then they have created people designers. This is the snapshot I have taken from the Oracle people designer that Oracle provides. So this is a diagram that they create, that this is being invoked. I'm accessing the employee travel status web service, I'm accessing American Airlines web service, airlines web service and stuff. But end of it, what is happening behind this is just XML file. This is just a fancy way to represent XML file. So they are representing business processes in terms of XML. And they are giving you fancy designers to make working with that XML simple. So internally, this entire diagram might be 30 lines of XML in which I'm giving him where is this particular web service, I'm stating the location of this web service, I'm stating what port it is working on, XML, nothing fancy. End of it, people is just XML. And these tools are making it more and more useful. So people is again an emerging technology which I think should be useful in another year or something of that sort. Currently, I don't think anybody has heard of people or used something. Oracle is pushing people in a big way, IBM is pushing in a big way. IBM has a good, sorry.
There's one standard when it uses called as Rosetta 9.
Right, yeah. I haven't really heard of it, but I've heard of it. Whether it's a people standard or what's it?
Actually, VPL is one step ahead. Like Rosetta 9 was taken further, and we can use VPL to use Rosetta 9 standards. Rosetta 9 basically defines business processes. So if you are doing a credit card, that what exactly you are going to do,
okay,
that is defined by Rosetta 9.
Okay.
And to implement this, you can use VPL. So that the process itself will be standards based. So if some XYZ person is doing credit card evaluation in steps, and then PQR company is doing it in M steps, they must come to a standard agreement.
Okay.
And that agreement is Rosetta 9. And VPL, if you develop a VPL component based on Rosetta 9, then it is supposed to be truly acceptable overall throughout the world as a standard component.
Okay. So you have defined some standard way for accessing services. So.
Yeah, accessing services, it's web services, we already have it.
All of this really is happening because web services support is so good. In J2E 1.4, even see there are what 5 or 6 APIs just for web services. So web services support today is so powerful that calling a web service or creating a web service is not very difficult. If you use any of the latest Java IDEs, you'll see in just a couple of clicks you can create a new web service. So it's very simple. So if I can create a web service that easily, I can also get somebody to access that web services quite easily using some other API. You use JAX-RPC and all that stuff that you might have heard of in J2E. So as using web services gets more easier by the day, these things will become more popular. Without web services, people and SO, I don't think really is going to sell, because we have been doing those things for quite some time. Unless web services becomes very easy to use and becomes very popular, these won't really catch on. But once that happens, these things are very useful. That defining my entire business process, like I'm booking a ticket or I don't recall what the flow is for. Okay, I think it's getting the price for a flight or something like that. Talking to web services provided by the various airline carriers. Okay, so something like this, defining all of that in just an XML file or in just a diagram is a very powerful thing to have. So tomorrow if you are developing a new application and you can just put down your entire workflow for your application in a simple design or just drag and drop a few things and your entire workflow is in place, it's a very powerful feature to have. But unless you have web services working well at the back end, this is not really going to catch on. It might. Anything with SOA people? We'll have some time at the end as well. Next up is EJB3. How many of you have tried out something with EJB3? How many of you tried out EJBs? Fair number. Okay. EJB is the biggest problem with EJB is that if you... What have you felt are the big issues with EJB?
Deployment.
Sorry?
Deployment people.
Deployment is a pain, and developing itself, again, all those home, remote, and so many deployment descriptors, a big XML file. So EJB is never really caught on to as much as they expected it to because of the complexity inherent in EJB. There's a home interface, there's a remote interface, there's local access, there's deployment descriptor, whatnot. So it's fairly difficult, it's rather very difficult. So what they have tried to do is with EJB 3, the emphasis is totally on simplifying EJB. They are not trying to do any new fancy features, it's completely on simplifying EJB. And for simplifying EJB, they have made use of annotations. Are you aware of what annotations are? How many of you are aware of annotations? Okay. Okay, so if I were to put it briefly, annotations are just metadata feature that is given in J2SE5.4. So using annotations, you want to tell the compiler a little more than what is already there in the code. For example, in this example, you can see that I have a class, my class, and I have a method toString. But this is my annotation that overriding. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to give the compiler a little more information than what is already there in my Java code. I'm trying to tell the compiler that this method is supposed to override a method in its superclass. Fine. So this is not there in my code. This is the additional metadata that I'm providing using a Java annotation. And this add to override will work out of the box. You try to write this code in any J2SE5.0 machine, this will work. So there are 5 or 6 other annotations that come to you out of the box. Always you can write your own annotations if you want to. But what add override does here is tell that I am trying to override a method in the superclass. So do you think this will compile this class in J2SE5? No, it will not. It will not compile.
String is the default object method.
Yeah. What I am telling it to override is I am trying to override the toString method in the superclass. And here my class, the superclass for my class is java.lang.object. And toString method in object does not take a parameter. So it will say this is not a valid thing. So this is a very useful thing to have when you're writing code. It's just like safety net kind of a thing. You don't make any mistakes because of these things. Okay, so what they have done with EJP3 is they have just taken this new feature in J2SE5 and tried to make EJP simple using annotations. Okay, so this is a stateless session being in EJP3. So this is the annotation that I have here saying that this is a stateless bean, this is the name of the bean that I have provided. And what you will see here, this is not an abstract class, this is a normal, as they call it, POJOs, plain old Java objects. This is normal Java class, you can compile it straight away, no problem. A normal Java class, you just add an annotation saying that this is a stateless session bean, and you also say that this is the name of the bean is so and so. Fine, you do not implement any different interface. For example, if I wrote this same session EJB in EJB 2.1, I'll be implementing session bean here. Instead, I am implementing the interface that I have written. This is a common question when you teach EJB to anybody. They'll say that you are writing a remote interface in which you have your business methods, but in the bean class that you write, you don't implement the interface. Why do you do something like that? You are not forcing the same method on the bean class. So this goes away with EJB3, that you actually implement the interface that you have written. So what I've done here is, so the session EJB is my remote interface. I've said that it is a stateless session bean, and I've also given it a name. And the next slide, this is my remote interface. Nothing fancy, nothing in it. I'm not extending anything, nothing. I just said that I put an annotation saying this is a remote. That's all. There's no home interface, there's no remote interface. Apart from there's a remote interface, there's no home interface that I have to write. There's no deployment descriptor. There's no EJP jar.xml file that you have to create. That is gone. It is optional. If you want EJP jar and you are very happy with EJP 2.1 of way of working with EJPs, it's optional. You can still create your deployment descriptors and work in that fashion, but it's not compulsory. You can just write annotations. All the information that you are conveying today in a deployment descriptor is possible in EJP to convey using annotations. So all the information about the EJP, all the information that you want for the bean to run properly, will go in the code itself. There will be no separate XML file to make things more complicated. Everything will go in the EJP itself and as part of an annotation in the EJP, and it should run straight away. So just two classes, two normal plain old Java classes, as they call plain old Java POJOs. That's a common phrase that they use, POJOs, plain old Java objects. So two plain old Java objects that will do the trick for you, and it's really simple. EJB3 EJB has never been simple, right? From 1.0, 1.1, 2.0, 2.1, whatever, they put in a lot of features in it, but it was never simple. You had to use a powerful Java IDE if you have had really wanted to do something positive with EJP. Otherwise, EJPs were never simple to use. With EJP3, I think for the first time they have something that is really simple. And add to this the features that are there in the Java IDEs today, it becomes even more simple. Actually, writing this even in TextPad or Notepad is quite simple. But if you want and you use a Java IDE, it's even more simple. So that's EJP3. it's something similar for entity beans as well. With entity beans, even you write annotations there saying that this is the table that I want to work with and the fields and all that stuff. Everything goes in annotations. Last point is about scripting languages. How many of you have used any scripting language, like say PHP?
Perl.
Okay. I think PHP is a big threat to Java, personally. I've been working on PHP for the past year, apart from what I've been doing with Java. I've been putting in quite some time in PHP as well. And I feel that PHP really has something that Java definitely does not have. It's ready-made out of the box, it works quite easily. Anybody can pick up PHP and start developing PHP applications in 3 days time. And deploying it is also very simple. So these scripting languages, PHP, I think really there's a risk for Java being wiped out of the small and mid segment. Already you will see that the small and mid-sized segments, companies are working with PHP so much, and I think it will just keep growing even more. Because Java is not quick, it's not fast. Developing a Java application will take you a few weeks time or something like that. And it's not easy to develop. PHP is a lot easier than Java. And anybody has tried using a shared hosting for Java? Hosting a Java application on a shared hosting. It's an especially difficult task to do. It's a royal pain to deploy a Java application on a shared hosting machine. Deploying Java on a server that is running on your own machine is quite simple. But you try to deploy it on a web server that is hosted by somebody else, it's really difficult. Because the lib files, you don't have access to the lib and it's really difficult. You have to keep communicating with the server people. And it does not work. Shared hosting for Java does not work. It's also very expensive compared to PHP. Whereas with PHP, you will see that any of the hosting services, if you go for any host that you have today, any web host gives you PHP and MySQL out of the box. They don't charge you even extra for that. Whereas for Java hosting, it's expensive, it's difficult, and it does not work. End of it, it does not work. So Java shared hosting does not work, and PHP has a lot of features there which make things very simple. And also there are so many PHP applications out there that really are ready for prime time. There are PHP content management systems, there are PHP applications for project management, there's everything for PHP. So why would you go for Java? That happens at times. For example, the site indicthreads.com that we are running, or kubethreads or pythonthreads.com, all of them are running on PHP. Although we have a site about Java, we looked at the Java options that we had, the Java hosting possibilities that we had, and the Java content management systems that we had, and we ended up that it's not possible, we have to go with PHP. Getting a PHP hosting was easy, and developing a PHP CMS based application was a lot easier. So I think that's a big threat for Java, unless Java something different happens in Java in the immediate future. And IBM and Oracle both have put their weight behind PHP to a certain extent. IBM recently, they had some partnership with Zend, and Oracle also has done something similar. So PHP I think is a big threat to Java, especially in the small and mid-sized segment. In the enterprise segment, for the big companies where security and all that, security robust and blah blah blah, all that you might have heard for Java J2E, where those are big issues, it would take a little longer for PHP to penetrate, because PHP still is like Java people might look down on PHP to a certain extent, that PHP is like applications. But that is going to change with these big companies coming in and new frameworks coming up. So once PHP penetrates the enterprise market, I think Java will be in trouble in that market as well. But in the small and mid-sized market, I think Java is gone compared to PHP. Okay, Java has a scripting language called Groovy. Anybody has heard of Groovy?
It's a language in itself,
but end of it creates a class file. So they have given you a different syntax and made it a little easier to work with. But end of it, when you run this Groovy file, it becomes a Java class file.
It won't run in a JRE. That's the basic thing.
So if you have the Groovy libraries, it will work.
Groovy or Groovy? What are
Groovy, GRO. Groovy is a different. I'm talking about Groovy.
I'm sorry.
Groovy, the site is groovy.codehost.org. Groovy, then Groovy, Python, those are different things. But there's a small attempt that is being made in the Java world to make Java a little simpler to use and match up to PHP to a certain extent. And that is the Groovy scripting language that they have come up with. And there's also JPython, but rather Jaichan. I haven't used it, so I don't know how easy or difficult it is to use Jaichan. Groovy is quite easy to use, but it does not have the momentum right now. Groovy is The syntax is simpler. You save a file and it internally creates the class file and stuff. You don't even have to compile the files. But it does not have the momentum. It's not as popular as anything else. If Groovy gets some momentum going, maybe Groovy might be able to match up to PHP or compete with PHP to a certain extent. But as of today, I think PHP is really ruling the small and mid-sized segment. That's all. Four things: Ajax, EJP3, SOA, and scripting languages. These things, I think, are the four things to watch out for over the next year or two. And these things will either die or either become really big. So if you're trying to develop a product today, go and develop the Ajax framework. You might make millions. Any doubts? Any queries?